Love Podcast Hate Nonsense. It's the Politics Joe podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Bonus ep. Bonus ep of the piss cast.
We're
going to keep it tight, tight record.
With the T-Birds from Greece.
Yes. We were both rocking leather yesterday.
Yeah.
And I've gone for an alternate leather today.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll do a third leather tomorrow.
Yeah, I could go for another leather tomorrow. I could go for the leather that Jacob Rees-Mogg once saw me in Westminster and said, ah, you look like you're in the Gestapo.
Great. Great.
It's a floor-length black leather coat. I wasn't trying to look like that. I was trying to look like
it
more...
It does have quite overt Nazi connotations.
Well, I thought I looked Matrix, actually.
Oh, yeah. Trinity. Cool. Should we talk about Rwanda?
Yeah.
I mean, we did a bit yesterday.
So yeah. Well, should we cover...
Maybe that means we can do less today.
Right. Back to the piss? No, we're going right in.
Yes.
Okay.
Straight in.
So last night there was the ping pong between the House of Commons and the House of Lords. Ping pong essentially means that both houses can't agree on the exact wording of how they would like the final bill to look like, how the shape of it. And so it kept bouncing between the two.
Mm.
Five times it bounced. Sticking points were the Afghanistan amendment.
Mm.
Second sticking point, well, big sticking point was defining Rwanda as a safe country. So the Lords wanted an independent monitoring group to assess whether Rwanda was a safe country. And then they wanted the Secretary of State to come to the House and tell the House he was confident in the report and in the country. And the ministers refused to do that.
Mm. Okay. So that demand for the phrase that's used is trust but verify, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's, we trust when the legislation says, it could be about anything, but in the instance of Rwanda, that Rwanda is a safe country. We trust that. However, because this is no small matter, because this is the law of the land, we will also say, we're going to trust that, but we're going to set up this extra mechanism, this extra piece of, well, catchments to establish, to verify whether or not that's actually the case. And that's pretty standard right across all kinds of legislation that affects all sorts of different things.
Yeah, well, it's very helpful for procedure if a Secretary of State comes and tells the House something is true by their judgment, or just true, because then it means that when that Secretary of State is called for evidence in front of a select committee or is being questioned in the House of Commons by other MPs, it's there's a responsibility there.
Mm. And in terms of the Afghans, is the reason the government's opposing that because their argument would go, you know, we have the Arab scheme. There's already a mechanism by which Afghans can come to Britain. And so if they were to allow this provision into the bill, they're basically conceding that they're not learning enough via their actual established mechanism. So you're kind of admitting that Arab doesn't work. Is that...
Well, Arab is full. So what the contention was, sort of outside of the chamber, was that there was a question over whether people who were already lined up for the Arab scheme would be included in this. And it was later clarified that they wouldn't be, which is why some of the Lords actually bended to the amendment in the end. But so that scheme actually has been full since our withdrawal. It was packed out.
Yeah.
So there's been no... Should we actually listen to the DEP, Sammy Wilson, because he raised this yesterday in the chamber?
Sure, yeah, let's do it.
Throughout this bill, my party, both here and in the other place, has given, by and large, support to the government, even though at times we've been sceptical and we have been concerned about how effective some of the measures are. But I've got to say, Madam Deputy Speaker, we draw the line when it comes to the Lord's Amendment 10F and the protection of people who have served with our armed forces in dangerous situations and now find their lives being put in jeopardy. And this amendment, I don't believe me. The Minister has made the point time and time again that some of these amendments are wrecking amendments or attempts to create loopholes, etc. Let's look at the amendment. People who will be covered by this amendment, first of all, will have served this country. Secondly, as a result of that, their lives will be in danger. Thirdly, when they arrive in this country, they have within a week to immediately inform the authorities that they're here. And then that allows for their records to be looked at, for their claims to be verified, and for their connections with the armed forces to be ascertained. And lastly, if they haven't done that, then in any subsequent cases, the courts can draw inference from it. So nothing can be more watertight than this particular amendment. And yet the government is refusing to accept it on the basis, well, there's already arrangements in place. Well, why is it, and my colleague from Strangford has raised time and time again in this House, and as of others, why is it that there are people who serve the armed forces in Afghanistan who find themselves in danger at present? They're on the run from the police in Pakistan. They're hiding because the police in Pakistan want to send them back to Afghanistan where they'll be in danger. Why? Because the system has not worked for them.
What do you make of what Sammy Wilson had to say there then?
Well, so he started off by saying, look, we support you normally, and we're normally, you know, we back what you have to say. However, today, he said that the UK had a moral duty to help prevent those who helped its campaign in Afghanistan receive safe passage in the UK. So, you know, he's talking there about the system not working for them. And that's when he's talking about the Arab scheme, about it not being. Basically, what the problem with that scheme was that you had to have, I forget the exact number that you had to have, but some sort of army or UK government number that made you eligible for that scheme. So that meant if you'd worked as an unofficial translator or you had just sort of joined in and the Taliban had identified you as someone who had been working with the British Army, you wouldn't be eligible for the scheme. But that meant that when we had the withdrawal, you were persona non grata.
Do we begrudge the Taliban doing that? I mean, it's kind of the law of the playground, right?
Sure.
Snitches get stitches. We all know the rules.
But it's confusing when you think about, you know, Johnny Mercer, who's the Veterans Minister. It's confusing that
I'm very confused when I think about Johnny Mercer. I think about him a lot.
Yeah? Mm. Good. It's confusing that he would not be backing that amendment, that he would not be pressuring the government to give in to that amendment. Because, you know, essentially what they want no loopholes whatsoever. And we'll come to the torture part of this in a minute.
Great.
But they want no loopholes. And it's bizarre because you think about Johnny Mercer and how often he's speaking about the need to protect veterans. And he's actually raised it in Parliament several times about Afghans. Why cave now?
It's kind of damning, really. If someone's prepared to assist your armed forces, I mean, what on earth are you doing, like abandoning them to the enemy? I mean, I think it's a total moral failure on the behalf of the government to not be able to help those people. There's people, Sammy Wilson was talking about it, right? They're like hiding out in Pakistan and potentially being sent back to Afghanistan by the Pakistani police. And if they go back to Afghanistan, it's not looking good.
And it's such a bad look for Britain on the world stage, because if in the unlikely event we do enter into another war, you know, the British flag used to be, oh, okay, yeah, that's an honourable flag. Mm. They'll look after us. And then
yes. God, I love the Union Jack. I love the Union Jack.
Yeah, but that's proof now that...
God, I love the Union Jack.
Yeah?
Yeah. We've talked about the Union Jack a lot in this studio.
Oh, you actually do? You're not doing a bit?
Well, no.
Because I quite like the Union Jack.
Do you?
I think it's quite a nice flag. I think it's a lot nicer than the St. George's Cross. I'm not talking connotations here. I'm just talking aesthetically.
I like that triangle one. Is it Nepal?
Right.
What's the nation with the triangle flag?
The Illuminati?
Always. It is Nepal. Yeah. There are two triangles on the side. Sick flag.
Yeah?
Sick flag.
Big fan of that.
Yeah, massive flag of that. I like the Japanese flag.
Stop trying to derail the conversation.
I'm not. I'm having a serious conversation with you.
Yeah, all right. You like
about
the Japanese
symbolism
flag.
And flags. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So anyway, this is part of Downing Street saying that they're going to make no concessions for...
Oh, I like that. Tough talk.
Yeah, tough talk.
Yeah.
So the immigration minister, illegal immigration minister, Michael Tomlinson?
Yeah.
was on the broadcast round this morning, and he got into a bit of a fight with Michelle Hussein.
Mm.
And he was very curt with her.
That's a big contrast, actually, because him and Ferrari were getting on famously this morning.
Do you know something? That is exact. Because did you go from Ferrari to Michelle?
Mm, yes.
Yeah, naturally. And and yes.
The connoisseur's breakfast. Yeah.
The contrast was the way that he was speaking to her was, sorry, it was sexist.
Ooh.
It was.
Them's fighting words, Ava Santina.
She was asking very reasonable questions, such as, have you put together a list of people? Who will be vetting the process? Have you got an aeroplane yet? Where is the airport going to be? These are reasonable questions for a journalist to be asking when you're telling them that you're telling her that flights are about to take off from in 10 to 12 weeks' time. It's like, okay, where from?
Mm.
What's the process going to look like?
This is your chance to put some information out there then, perhaps to try and head off some of those. If you're a victim of torture, can you still be removed under this?
Rwanda is a safe country, and yes, it will be possible to remove those to Rwanda.
Understood. So any victim of torture, no point applying on that basis. Victim of trafficking?
Rwanda's a safe country, Michelle. I'm not going to... You could go through a whole raft of this. You've asked me a question.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying because personal circumstances...
Michelle, this is rather frustrating. You've asked me a question, and you could ask me a series of questions. Could you do this challenge? Could you do that? You could ask me an infinite number of challenges. You could say, right, well, here's a handbook of all the... You're not going
to
get that clarity because the Act hasn't yet come into force. There is not royal assent.
You're trying to stop the legal challenges, aren't you? For example, that's why a lawyer could just say, okay, well, if my client is a victim of torture... There's no point applying on that basis because that doesn't rule them out. Whatever physical or mental state they are in, they're still eligible to be on a plane to Rwanda.
Michelle, respectfully, I think regardless of what I say, there are likely to be legal challenges. And I've said that and I've been clear
that's
about that.
That's not my question.
It's not your question, Michelle, but it's my answer.
Law rules people out or leaves them continuing to be eligible. That's what I'm trying to clarify. It's how you're going to use this law because you've got it now.
He was rude. He basically got very shouty. What was the phrase he shouted back at her?
What do you mean?
He
was doing it a lot. They were talking over each other.
But he accused her of something. I can't think what it was.
I don't know what you're referring to. We could just listen to it. We could listen to it and then.
Go on then, play it now.
Roll the clip.
I'm going to get on with a painstaking
you
and
fully
difficult.
Trained the caseworkers
no,
yet?
Because the bill passed. Oh, Michelle,
You've asked the question.
You asked the question with an incredulous tone in your voice, and I'm trying to answer it, and then you interrupt me. Yes, the bill passed it last night at shortly after midnight. I said I was standing there in the chamber of the House of Lords shortly after midnight.
How do we feel about the illegal immigration minister tone policing? Radio 4's Today presenter.
Yeah, I think that's... I would say that it's sexist.
Yeah.
You're being invited onto that programme.
Mm.
You are being asked questions by the free press and you're not happy with the tone. He also didn't speak like that, you know.
Is it a... I'm not making excuses for him before anyone accuses me of that. Is it a BBC thing? Is it he's trying to strike this tone and adopt this position of you are just nitpicking because you are the lefty, liberal, woke BBC. Oh, classic you. Classic you, Michelle. Classic you. Classic Today programme that you would have a problem with this. Of course you'd have a problem with this because you're in the metropolitan bubble.
Mm.
You're a new broadcasting house. You don't know what the rest of the country's thinking. You don't know that most people support this. No one cares about where the flights go from, who's going to be on them, whether they can be tortured or not. No one cares. They want it to go. And you are part of the problem. And is he trying to sort of create that dichotomy, create that sort of sense of theatre and combat? And actually, the reason I'm saying that is when you do compare and contrast with other appearances like the one we just mentioned, where he doesn't strike that tone. Is it kind of a government versus the BBC thing rather than necessarily a Tomlinson versus Hussein thing?
Well, when he begged... Yeah, I would agree with that. And he begged Ferrari, actually, two or three times, if you'll have me back on the programme, Nick, if you'll have me back on the programme. And to Michelle, he was just like...
Shut the fuck up.
BBC, you will have me back.
Yeah.
You know it, I know it. Let's go.
Yeah.
But I think it's the sort of skirting around the questions as well are... That's the entire problem with this Rwanda plan. This is the reason why people are saying it's a cover up and it's a for you know other mistakes that the administration has made.
Mm.
Because it's not a working practice. There's nothing concrete about it. If you actually, if you think about how long we've been talking about Rwanda now, if you were deadly serious about getting planes off to Rwanda, you wouldn't have sold the accommodation that was earmarked in Kigali for the migrants to go to, which, by the way, he admitted this morning they have actually sold off. First time, actually, because I think it might have been, was it Tom Peck or Hugo Rifkind? One of them got accused by the Home Office of
Rifkind.
Was it Rifkind?
I think it was Rifkind, yeah.
Of lying through their teeth about potentially selling off the accommodation, and they had. you would also have some kind of airport arranged. I don't know much about private flight arrangements, but I'm pretty sure that you have to book that sort of thing in.
Charter flights, yeah. I wouldn't surprise me if they ran it out of RAF bases, probably Bryce Norton, to be honest with you.
Is that where I went? Is that where you sent me once?
I could well have sent you there once upon a time, yeah. It became such a headache for them running these flights out of commercial airports, you know. For example, you get nefarious characters like Ben Smoke chaining themselves to the landing gears on the runway.
Not a terrorist.
Not a terrorist. Fundamentally not a terrorist in the eyes of the British judicial system.
Mm.
And so we did a story on it on Joe maybe 4, 5, 6 years ago, that the increasing sort of militarization of these deportation flights, that they just started running them out of the RAF bases because the security is better there, so they could prevent things like that from happening.
And then you don't run into like members of the public. You know, when they were deporting people to Jamaica, and then people who are going on their summer holiday turn around and there's some man chained to a seat at the back with a couple of Home Office officials. And, you know, those bloody lefties on the plane look at that barbarity and start, you know, screaming and shouting that they're not happy about it.
Mm.
You know, they're just
woke. They're woke as well.
Woke.
Yeah, woke as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think you're totally right to talk about how unworkable it is. The cost alone. I mean, we will talk about the moral arguments, I think, in a moment. So I don't want anyone to think that my problem with this is that it costs too much money, because that's not the right base of my problems. We'll talk about that in a moment when we talk about the other news that's come out today about the channel. The cost alone, right, which at the moment I think we're in for $500 million with the Rwandans. So currently talking 300 people going there at most. So that's £1.8 million per person. You could bypass this entire chaotic nonsense. And just, you could have put them up in the Ritz for that money, right?
Well, you've also got to pay the $11,000 each to fly them out there.
That's an expensive flight.
Yeah, well, that's the problem with going private or going RAF. It's quite expensive to charter a plane.
Fucking hell, 11 grand.
That's what the Independent estimated.
You could get to Australia for less than 11 grand.
Well, or...
You could probably fly first class. Business. Economy premium.
I think when you think about money management and you think about, like... Sorry, not to, like... Not to go all FBPE, but you think about the sort of money that HMRC goes after people for who've incorrectly filled out their tax form or incorrectly filled out their universal credit declaration, and they're going after them for a couple of thousand pounds here and there.
Mm.
When you think about how much this actually costs,
yeah.
To, you know, it just sort of puts in perspective.
Well, this is it, Ava. You know, we live in sick note Britain, right? And people who are depressed and anxious, they cost us far too much money when it comes to our benefit system. So, you know, I think there's absolutely zero cognitive dissonance in suggesting that it's okay to pay £11,000 to fly someone to Rwanda, but that someone who's chronically depressed should actually just get off their arse and go to work.
Well, even if that person went to work, yeah. Say that person was earning a 24 grand salary.
Right, yeah, nice.
What he will pay into the treasury in taxes will be less than what it costs to put a refugee on a plane to Rwanda.
Mm. Yeah. Nice. Big brain stuff.
Maths,
quick maths.
You should have heard me earlier. I was talking about fixed rate mortgages.
Slow her down.
No, but you know, it's like, I think it's my little secret, like that I can really talk about.
Mortgages.
I really can.
If I was you, I'd keep that a secret. I wouldn't let too many people know that.
No, but every now and again, I chat about it.
Yeah.
And I'll always be on with a man. And every time they're like, what Why is she doing that? I'm like, well, with the base rate, and like, you know, 0.1% here, not sure about that.
No, no, the dynamic is that I know about this.
Exactly.
Love that.
Yeah.
Who was it?
Oh, no, I don't want to.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's yeah, not, it's all not right, fair to be doing
fair,
that.
Fair,
but,
fair.
But it does, it happens all the time.
I bet it does.
We should do a little compilation of the math, because every time they're like...
Men feeling inadequate in broadcast studios when they're sat next to you.
Yeah, is she doing maths?
It's the format of this podcast.
Yeah. Is she doing maths next to me? I mean, I get it, because I really am, as I told you earlier, I really am a vibes-based journalist. I'm into that.
Yeah, 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 yeah. No, I think that's probably our sort of publishing maxim, really, as an organisation. No facts, just vibes.
It's the Politics Show cast.
Okay, so that's the kind of the practicality argument, which we've knocked off. I think we should talk about the moral argument as well. In relation to the fact that at least 5 people died in the channel this morning, right? With these boats that capsized.
Yeah.
Do you just want to set out what we know so far about that, and then I'll...
Well, there are quite a number of witnesses to the boat that capsized just off the coast of Calais, because naturally a lot of press flocked to Calais and Dunkirk this morning because they wanted the shot of... Rwanda bill passed last night, and now there are asylum seekers still crossing the channel. They wanted that for their morning broadcast round. So a lot of news outlets saw this boat take off from the French coast. A number of French police were pulling people off of the boat, so a number of them didn't get onto it. And then there was around 110 people, journalists have reported, on this dinghy that then hit a sandbank just off the coast and capsized. And then obviously people try to swim back, and not all of them were able to.
I think James Cleverly had something to say about this as well, didn't he? Straight afterwards.
He said these tragedies have to stop, but insisted the government was doing everything we can to stop small boats crossing the channel.
And that's the thing that bothers me the most. They like to dress up this policy, right, as a, the Rwanda policy, that is, as a moral imperative, right? They're taking the moral high ground because we have to stop this, simply the devastating humanitarian tragedies that are happening in the channel. We have to stop these people trying to cross the channel. They need help, in quotation marks. Otherwise, they will just continue to keep crossing the channel and they'll keep drowning, right? How are we going to help them? Oh, we'll deport them to Rwanda. Not what would stop people from crossing the channel? What could possibly stop them from making a life-threatening journey across the English Channel? Maybe if they could claim asylum without having to cross the English Channel. Maybe if you would put a processing centre in Calais. Maybe that would fix it. Maybe that would fix it immediately. And obviously, there will always still be some people who are trying to come illegally, and so they're not going to go there and claim. They'll still do the thing, right? But if we're talking about genuine refugees, and if your concern for them is so genuine, if you genuinely care, if you don't want them to die, why don't you do what the French offered to Priti Patel years ago and allow them to make their claims without having to do the crossing? But you won't. You don't, because that is not genuine. You don't actually care. You do not care at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it pisses me off.
Couldn't agree with you more, fella.
Great.
There's also a question about our foreign policy as a country, because
oh, yeah,
you could go to the root of a lot of the issues that we have. So a vast number of people who are attempting to cross the channel and actually have been getting on lorries again, which hasn't happened in years, are Sudanese. And that's
because of the civil war.
Yes, the country is very unstable. And I think that's sort of where the rhetoric of military-aged men comes from, because a lot of the Sudanese who travel are sort of between 16 to 24 young boys who have grown up in a civil war and they would like a better life for themselves. There's a question there about going to the root of the issue, which is civil war in Sudan. Should the West be doing more to try and assist in a reconciliation there? I don't know. We seem to put our beak into everything. So maybe, you know, putting our beak into something that is actually having a consequential impact.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about you. I think those fighting age men sound pretty entitled, actually.
Yeah.
Wanting to flee the civil war. I think they sound pretty entitled.
So Rishi Sunak is either going or has met with the Italian Prime Minister. Sorry, I can't quite remember from the press release. I think he actually might be going after he's been to Poland.
Right.
And he's going to be talking about their joint issues, quote unquote, with migration.
They love each other.
Well,
Maloney and Sunak.
Yeah, but that's because so migrants, they travel through Libya, they get the boat over to the corner of Italy.
Lampedusa.
Yeah, and then they travel onwards from there. So I think they want a joint approach, is what they were saying, from the two countries in tackling it. Now, the joint approach could be to tackle the issue at source. What's going on in Libya? What's going on in Sudan?
Mm.
And go from there.
I think the Conservative Party might not want to look too deeply into what's going on in Libya, to be quite honest with you. I think there might be some tough conclusions drawn, possibly, from that. Was it... I feel like I mentioned this on the podcast before. There's a video of David Cameron and I think Sarkozy, and I want to say they're in like Benghazi, like addressing the crowd, giving a speech after a bombing. I might be...
We have talked about this clip before.
Yeah.
Should we get the clip and put it here?
I don't think we can. I think it's a news agency clip. But anyway.
Oh, we didn't have a Joe camera in Benghazi? Sorry. Okay.
Would you, if there was a send on to Benghazi, would you be up for it?
Yeah.
Really?
Game.
Your game?
Game.
A pretty dangerous place, Libya.
Yeah.
At the moment.
Well, I don't know if you heard what Andrew Mitchell had to say, Defence Minister. Kigali is safer than London.
Deputy Foreign Secretary, please, DFS.
I would also, I'd like to put the argument forward that, you know, within Sadiq Khan's London, is Benghazi safer?
Probably.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
They haven't got that ULEZ there, have they?
No, they haven't got that ULEZ. We got a bit more reaction then from the Rwanda news?
Yeah, I think maybe should we listen to what Stephen Kinnock had to say when he was in the chamber?
Sure. Let's listen to it. Roll the clip.
Well, there's not really a huge amount more to be said about this sham, this con of a bill that hasn't already been said. The plan is as unworkable as it is unaffordable, and that's why Labour would instead repurpose the money that's being squandered and set aside for the scheme into a cross-border police unit and security partnership which would go after the criminal gangs upstream and restore order to our border. And we would create a new returns and enforcement unit to remove people from the country who have no right to be here, given that we have seen the return of failed asylum seekers collapsing by 44% under the Conservatives and the removal of foreign criminals decreased by 27%. Our plan will end the Tory boat's chaos, fix our broken asylum system and restore our border security. The government's plan is, as the former immigration minister himself described it, and a civil servant insider has admitted, is to get a few symbolic flights off the ground ahead of a general election, regardless of the wider impact. It really is tokenism and posturing of the worst sort. I will be.
So that's Stephen Kinnock there, and he is obviously on the Labour front bench, and he was talking about what Labour would do instead. So they have committed, Yvette Cooper has committed, to reversing the Rwanda scheme. Under a Labour government, planes will not take off to Rwanda. And his alternate scheme is to stop the boats at source. The problem that I have here is that he doesn't say how.
Yeah.
So what could that scheme be?
The thing they like to say, the Labour Party like to say, is smash the gangs, right? They say we'd smash the gangs. But I don't follow the logic, basically, because I think if you smash the gang, the many gangs, another one just pops up in its place. I mean, it's not like, as long as there's demand, the black market, the people traffickers will supply. I don't understand. If you break up the gangs that are doing it now, there will be more that come in their place. So I don't...
That is sort of the basic nature of supply and demand, really, isn't it?
It is. The invisible hand of the black market, yeah.
So what you're saying is, this is a wider... A wider problem.
I'm making a neoliberal critique, of the people smuggling. No, I don't follow. Like, unless you're going to militarize Normandy... How do you stop the gangs from launching boats? I don't follow.
Well, you could start with that sports centre having a hell of a lot, selling a lot of boats.
You start at decathlon and then you work your way along the coast. Yeah, I guess so.
But the problem really is there not being safe and legal routes. And I think that that phrase has actually got quite tired because so many commentators have said it in the past couple of years. But that is the big issue. They've shut off all the available routes and then they wonder why so many people are crossing the channel. That's what I wanted to say. There was a child that died last week, was it? Or last month? 7-year-old girl died in the channel.
Yep.
And you wonder, you know, all of the rhetoric over the past couple of years has been, it's men trying to come over here and we will not accept men anymore. And it's like, okay, so has the have they adapted to that now and they're now sending children first? Or children, women and children first? Mm. Do you know, everything that a government minister says has consequences. And they think they're so short-sighted, they think that it's just good enough to win over the electorate. And they're not thinking that, like, of the wider implications of what they've had to say. So they're not thinking that, like, by shouting, we're not going to let military-aged men into the country anymore, that might mean that gangs start putting 7-year-old children on boats.
Mm. Yeah.
So really, I think it's an unintended consequence. But
I think the intended consequence of saying it, though, is it's to evoke that image of, like, an enemy within, right? That's very clearly what it is with the fighting-age men, fighting-age Muslim men. It's very clearly trying to create this sense of, you know, you can look at the history of, like, McCarthyism, Reds Under the Bed, all the way through to whatever it is, you know. This idea that there's basically, like, a insurgent population of, in this instance, brown people who, should they so see fit, you know, march on Westminster, right? Because they're fighting age men. And obviously it kind of loses its gravitas when the people that are dying are, yeah, women and children.
The conflation that they've made as well between illegal immigration numbers and immigration numbers is probably one of the dumbest PR plans you could have possibly put forward.
Well, the contrast between the two figures is pretty stark, right?
Drastic, dramatic, cliff edge.
Yeah.
Like, we're literally talking about, like, Everest and Nevis. Like,
it's more than a million, right? The net migration figures when you include Ukraine, Hong Kong.
Yeah. I think it was 750,000 last year. But
students.
I could be, yeah.
And then
they put students in that number as well. You dumb fucking bitches. You idiots.
And then illegal. What we're talking, like, 30,000, isn't it? More, maybe a bit more, 30,000 in the last 6 months. I'm doing this off the top of my head.
No, I was just thinking. I was just worried about if my mountain analogy worked. Then,
yeah, I think so. I'll give you a mountain. Yeah.
Because that, okay. So even if you immediately tomorrow eliminate quote unquote illegal immigration, you stop the boats in their entirety. It must be a little bit more than that because there's been about 40,000 people who've crossed the channel.
Yeah, I think that was the that's like the small boats figure, like, year to date or something like that.
Anyway, so you stop them tomorrow. The actual immigration figure is still enormous. And that's because people move into the country and then they move out again and, you know.
I think in terms of, just to be specific on the numbers, I think in terms of, like, total arrivals, you're talking north of a million. I think the net is about 750,000.
Right.
And then in terms of total year illegal arrivals, I think it's between 60 and 80,000. So for a calendar year. So that we're just comparing like for like. That's all I was going to say on the numbers.
Nice. Yeah. You just K-burlied me there.
No. I K-burlied myself. Because I was the one who was.
Oh, it wasn't you. It wasn't you who I was talking about it with yesterday, actually. Sorry. I was talking about it with Sean. Someone raised their hand at K-burly yesterday and she went, put your hand down. Yeah. Ah!
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, I know. It was.
That's quite hot.
She's just got quite hot energy. I'm not talking about her appearance, sorry. I'm just talking about her journalistic skill.
Well,
it's
someone, because you can do that, for example, in a radio studio. If you want to signal to someone that you want to speak, but you don't want to do crosstalk and, you know, corrupt the integrity of the broadcast, you can kind of go, and the host will go, and then they'll come to you next.
Mm.
Was it like a government minister on TV trying to put their hand up to her to be like?
It was an interviewee.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, see, that's bold.
Yeah. And she was like, put your hand down.
I'm going to put my hand out.
Yeah.
You're going to put yours down.
Yeah. See? Me? Fine.
Yeah. You? No. This is my house.
Yeah. It was because they were both overlapping each other and he basically did that. And it was like a signal to say, right, you stop because I'm talking. Mm. And she was like,
ha ha. You misunderstand how this works, pal.
Yeah. Mm. You know, actually, one thing I would like to say, which I do think is quite interesting about the immigration figures, is the comparison between... There's quite a lot on Twitter about expats and immigrants at the moment that I'm enjoying. If you leave the UK and you're British to go and live somewhere, you're an expat. And if you you come here to work, you're an immigrant.
Yeah.
You know what I just think? I think that's really great marketing.
Yeah, smart. Spin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Spin.
Cool.
British immigrants.
Expats?
No, sorry, yes. Are we there? We done?
I think so.
I think this is a good counterweight to the piss cast. Because I would say that's a solid at least half an hour of actual content.
Yeah. Sorry Ed couldn't be here today. He's upstairs with a mouthful of piss. Chained to a radiator.
Keeps giving out blowjobs.
He went. The role play we did yesterday on the podcast wasn't enough for him. He wanted to really. He's gone full Austin Butler. He had to like method act it.
Oh, dark.
Cool.
Okay, so we'll be back tomorrow. This is a bonus episode for everyone.
Bonus.
Generous, aren't we? Mm. And we'll be wearing leather again.
Yeah, sure. I'll wear a different leather coat.
Wear the Gestapo coat.
I'll wear the Gestapo coat. Yeah, nice.
Because you see someone posting the subreddit that took a screenshot of Ed doing something that looks a bit like a Z Kyle.
What's a Z Kyle?
A Nazi salute.
Oh. Mm. Right. I'm glad it's managed to come back there three times during the podcast today because I don't think we talk about them enough.
We could do a history spin-off.
What would we do on that?
Discuss the Nazis.
Why? What? Who?
More
who,
podcasts.
Why
for everyone.
Would? Why would anyone hear us talk and then go? Do you know what I want to hear more from them about?
I mean, it's working so far. Lots of people do listen to this.
Mm. What if we did a spin-off where we actually? Why don't we get them to tell us what would you like us to do?
Spin-off podcast. Spin-off?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. You can wrap it up now.
Yeah?
Yeah?
Well, it's just nice. It's nice. It's a bit of both, you know, a bit of slap and tickle.
Yeah. I'm sad because I thought we did really well there. I thought we went full politics.
Yeah, we did do full politics.
Yeah. Do you like that everything...
This doesn't cheapen or undermine that.
Why? Well, I love to cheapen and undermine. I'm a vibes-based journalist.
Gaslight, gatekeep, girl boss.
Yeah.
Okay. Happy?
Yeah.
Me too. Goodbye. See you on the next one.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.